I always make a point to, when I run into a Vietnam vet, the thing I actually say is, I say, welcome home.
Never quit. Team never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you're watching this show. So today, before we get to our special guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question. And this week, we've got, if you could bring back any TV show that's been canceled or off the air, what would that TV show be?
Oh. That's actually a pretty good question.
Mm.
What do you got, Jason?
I think I would bring back probably Seinfeld.
Oh yeah, Seinfeld.
Great show.
It's a great show because I talk in one-liners. Like I always reference movie quotes and one-liners all the time. And my most of my staff who are under 30 have no damn clue what I'm talking about. So if we brought it back, then they would understand.
See, I think that's a language that you and I speak that the younger ones don't. Mm-hmm. And our parents definitely don't speak that. But
it's true.
I call it movie quote language.
And it's Marcus, the best. It's straight to the point.
And it is.
Matter of fact, when you talk like that, everyone knows exactly what you mean because there's a visual reference to it as well. Mm-hmm. And it kind of puts everybody on the same page. I was going to say Friends.
No.
I would go further back and say something like Saved by the Bell.
Wow, Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, I mean, far back.
All right,
didn't
we're going
most
back that
of the
far?
Cast members from Saved by the Bell like have a lot of life struggles afterwards? Like a bunch of them.
Yeah, they did.
I think that happens.
Who was the guy who played Screech?
Like,
didn't he end up in jail or something? Or what happened there?
But Mark Lopez is still going strong. Mario Lopez is still going really strong.
He made it.
That E Entertainment or whatever.
You're right. I think he was the one who ended up like carving out a pretty, pretty good post Saved by the Bell career.
Yeah. What about the A Team? Huh?
Oh, that's a good one.
Huh?
I'd go with A Team.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
We could definitely
do a remake of that.
Thinking about that, man. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, there was another show.
Love the A-Team, dude.
I watched when I was really little. She-Ra.
I just love the fact that. It was B.A., right?
Yeah.
He had to be knocked out. He couldn't fly.
He couldn't fly.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Mr. Like, how are you an A-Team? I mean, this is where we get into like the spec ops stuff.
Right.
How are you literally a Green Beret and you can't get into a plane conscience? Like,
exactly.
How does that work?
Exactly. You had to freaking knock him out every time. Mr. T. And Face. That was a freaking great show.
Did you ever watch She-Ra?
The cartoon?
Yeah.
As a kid? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing cartoons.
Well, I just
like
my mind, my mind went there.
He-Man, G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe. So this YouTube's great. So when my kids, when they started in the morning when I would make them breakfast, I would throw in G.I. Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Just that thing when I have them watch that cartoon from the cartoons mm-hmm. when we were kids.
It's great. It's great.
Yeah, so
I
good.
Had the, you know, I wanted more than anything that G.I. Joe aircraft carrier. Remember that?
Oh.
And I remember like going to Kmart and in my small town in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, where I spent 10 years, first part of my life, and just like staring in the aisle at Kmart at the aircraft carrier in this massive box. And it was like the holy grail that I could never find.
I think that thing's worth some money now, bro. I saw online a guy had the whole collection with all the strike fighters, both G.I. Joe and the Cobra. And that aircraft carrier was in there, fully assembled.
Okay, we have to stop talking about this because Marcus will order it on eBay.
Yeah.
He orders.
Well, I'll go in a rabbit hole with you all day on stuff like this, man.
Marcus, you deserve the aircraft carrier. Don't let Melanie tell you you don't deserve the aircraft carrier. You are good enough. You are smart enough.
Doggone it.
If you only saw his vintage toy museum that he has, it's a little
Yeah, I'm a little nostalgic. It's weird.
I went into this antique. I was down in Pueblo, Colorado in the fall, and I went into this antique mall. And I ended up purchasing this like little ceramic Christmas tree with the little lights, those little like things that you plug in. The lights. I had one of those in my room growing up as a kid. But there was this whole area and it was like nothing but G.I. Joe, like He-Man things. And it was like $100, like $100 for like one figurine, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And Marcus buys them.
Yeah, I do. That's weird. Okay. I mean, I got.
I'm not going to get in the middle. I'm not going to get in the middle of a domestic strife. Yeah,
it's okay.
No, I know enough to not to get in between Marcus and Melanie in this
debate.
It's
fine. I actually...
It brings happy memories when I see it. That's what it's for.
It does actually create something for me to buy him for his birthday because he's very hard to buy for, but I can always fall back on a vintage toy and it would be a hit.
See, that's value for you too, Melanie. Yeah. Like, the fact that you can just always press the easy button.
Yeah, the eBay.
There are some go-tos for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, Spider-Man.
What about you?
I would definitely go Game of Thrones. If they had a little bit more time on the last season and then stretched it out, I mean, they could have gone forever. And I would always be watching that.
I've never seen it.
Wow.
Game of Thrones?
I've never watched it.
It's the greatest show of all time.
Well, we tried to start it, but she wasn't into the wizards.
It is a great show.
Yeah,
there's so much wisdom in that.
Man,
there is.
Get in there. I'm not going to talk about it. There was a scene that every time I turned it on, that's what was playing, and I just could not get into it. But let's just pass by there.
It's funny you should mention that because I actually just finished rewatching it with my partner. She had never seen it originally, and I had watched it, you know, back in the day. Uh-huh. So we rewatched it. It took us like a year to get through it, and literally this weekend we just finished the whole thing.
Oh well,
it's a good one.
It ages well.
It does.
Yeah,
you can watch it whenever.
Yeah, it holds timeless, up for sure. That's a great question. Well, man, thanks again for coming on here and doing this. Let's back this up a little bit. I want to know where you're from and how you got into the military.
Yeah, so I grew up in Wisconsin. In my long time Colorado. Now I represent a district in Colorado. I've been in Colorado for about 20 years, but I grew up, was born and raised in Wisconsin, born in Madison, and then lived for 10 years in a very small town of 15,000 called Beaver Dam. And my father was laid off, and then we ended up moving to the Madison area for job opportunities for him. And honestly, I first got hooked up in the military for money, for college money, right? I did well in school, got into college, come from a family that doesn't have a lot of money. You know, working class background, and was driving down the road and saw one of those. This is before 9/11. Saw one of those big billboards that said, you know, for 1 week in a month and 2 weeks in the summer, like you can have your college paid for. I'm like, that seems like a good damn deal.
Yeah, right? I remember those.
Because I was working, you know, I was working construction. Was working, you know, 20 hours a week on a construction site, going to classes in the afternoon and evenings. And started working when I was 15 in fast food, so I was struggling to make it all work, and seemed like a good thing. So I actually enlisted in the National Guard, Wisconsin National Guard. Took a semester off, went to basic training, and was doing the weekend warrior thing. Enjoyed it. Signed on for ROTC. Was going to be a National Guard officer. Then 9/11 happened, and all bets were off.
Yeah,
and I said, you know, we're at war. I'm not going to ask people to do my fighting for me. So I actually asked for a transition from a National Guard contract to active duty, and then asked for infantry and airborne and ranger. And that was my first time when I realized, be careful what you ask the Army for, because they might give you everything you ask for.
They were great at recruiting us back in the day. I feel like those of us born back in the 1900s, all the movies, all the campaigning they did to get us in there. And if I'd have known better, if I'd have had a little bit more direction, I'd have done the guard route too. just to pay for college. Yeah. I mean, of course, we weren't anticipating the wars kicking off and then making a full transition. But I tell a lot of the kids now that I mentor, man, the military is a great place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it changed my life, totally changed the trajectory of my life. I wouldn't be sitting here now. I wouldn't have gone to public service. You know, I did it originally for college money. And then it actually, I realized that I loved serving the country. Like I had a passion for it. And, you know, that I got bit by the public service bug and there was no going back.
There's freedom in that. I feel like that's true freedom when you're actually serving the country. Did you have any in the line of your family, dad, grandfathers, grandmas, anybody else serving?
No, there was some National Guard in my family, a couple of folks that served in the Guard, but really no major military experience to speak of. So my family didn't really know what to make of it, honestly. They're like, you're going to do what? And then I, you know, was the distinguished military graduate of my ROTC class. So I got to choose my assignment and, you know, chose 82nd Airborne Division, paratrooper, and then ultimately went into the 75th Ranger Regiment. But yeah, no background in it. What about you? Do you guys have lineage?
We do all the way back. Aunts, uncles, grandads.
Literally every single generation in Marcus's family.
Military class, service heart kind of deal.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
But it's not pushed on us. Like you know that they're in, and they'll tell a few stories here and there, but there's nothing hanging on the walls or anything. It was never like that. And my father was Vietnam, so he didn't talk about it at all. The baby boomers got messed up by their war. I feel like it just, that whole generation suffered. I mean,
they did. Well, they ended up conflating the politics of the war with individual service, right? And, you know, maligning the service members and, you know, truly a stain and the way that a lot of those vets were treated when they came back, right? I think we've kind of learned a lesson not to conflate broader politics and policy with individual service of you know, our veterans and our service members. But certainly back then we didn't learn that lesson and it was tough.
Oh, our generation got coveted. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like a full twist. I mean, there are so many things out there for our guys and girls coming back now and the populace loves them. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the commercials, everything, all the shirts you see, people dressing like us, everything.
Yeah. Do you think it's too much? I mean, do you think it's gone to a point where, you know, it kind of changes the way that people view service and
the patriotism from the civilians?
No, not, I wouldn't say patriotism. It'd be like the you know, the manner in which folks, you know, put all the vets on the pedestal. And I'm not saying it's bad, but I just wonder, I'll put it this way. Do you think that sometimes it's meant to make people feel better for, you know, the wars that we went through and not wanting to have a deeper conversation about veterans and kind of our failing on veterans policy?
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra-titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save
big time
for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Well, that's a deep one, man. I don't know. I would never take that away from them. I think some people don't know what to do or what to say, and in their ability to serve our country would be serving our veterans in some way. It's the only way they can show it.
I think coming from a family that I do not have a family that served in the military at all, but a very, very patriotic family. I think that the patriotism and the, you know, how you're saying like everybody wearing the shirts, it's just showing support for the veterans. I think it's amazing because even the Vietnam veterans that came home that were treated like crap are now getting the recognition and appreciation and letting them know that we recognize you as human and we love you and thank you for serving. Because a lot of them didn't choose to serve. The draft was huge back then. A lot of people were drafted. Do we know the numbers on that?
I don't.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge number. So just the amount of patriotism that we have now, I think, goes back generations. I mean, look at how we treat our World War II guys now and how we treat our Vietnam guys. It's just, I don't know. I think it's full circle.
That's a great point, because veterans don't like talking about it anyways.
Yeah, so in order healthy.
It's
right, healthy to talk about it.
Yeah, and civilians, they don't like to ask. I guess it's kind of, I remember what it was like before that, and so you didn't want to, you know, intrude or be rude or anything like that. So I think just wearing something that showed them an outward sign and showing them, like, hey, man, I got your back no matter what, you know, that's.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I always make a point to, when I run into a Vietnam vet, the thing I actually say is I say, welcome home.
Yeah.
I don't say thank you for service. I'll just say, welcome home, brother. Because they never got that. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. They never got that welcome.
Where does that come from? Because I was taught to do that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that exact phrase.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I think I said something one time and they kind of tuned me up for it. And I was like, well, what am I to say? So, well, if you see a Vietnam guy and we know who they are, especially our generation, you can spot them. You know exactly who they are. They say welcome. Just say welcome home to them, and they respond to that.
Yeah, they do, and I get emotional even saying it.
Yeah.
Right, because I just can imagine this idea of not even being welcomed home, but worse than that, being maligned and marginalized, and how much harder that was for them dealing with PTS and all this trauma. It was really really tough stuff.
I mean, you see the technology we have today for our amputees. I mean, they're making them into Iron Men. I mean, it's the most impressive thing. Guys now, they get jacked up and they'll say, hey, man, go ahead and take my leg because I saw this new one you guys are making and I'd rather have that one instead. The Vietnam guys had mannequin arms. I had a guy that ran one of my foundations. He literally had a mannequin arm for the longest time.
Really?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Never complained about it.
It was like that. What's the Adam Sandler movie with the golf guy?
Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, Happy Apollo. Gilmore. It was like that hand.
It's not Apollo Creed. Yeah. What was his name?
I can't think of
it. Yeah, the name of the
Carl
character.
Carl Weathers. Thank you.
Oh, Carl Weathers.
Carl Weathers.
Yeah.
One of my favorite, like, underestimated actors of all time, though. Like, he's just so good. He was great in Predator. He was the best.
Predator. He was awesome in Predator, man. Fucking Anne Hathaway Gilmore, and he's Apollo Creed.
This goes to the point, like, these are the movies I grew up with, and I say this stuff all the time. And like, the other day, I was saying the I Ain't Got Time to Bleed, the Jesse Ventura.
Dude, Ventura. Play.
And the people I was with are like, what? Like, what are you saying? Like, they didn't understand where I came from.
Yeah. I completely get your sense of humor, which opens up so many doors when you get that, because especially when you drop it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if your timing is on point with those kind of things, man, it says so much more. And when you're standing in a room for people who don't get that, they're like, well, you know, all right. So we're rabbit holing, man. Yeah. All right. So
I had
you get in the Army, and you get your first station out of boot camp was Bragg.
Well, no, I enlisted, went to Fort Jackson for boot camp, and then Fort Rucker in Alabama because I was with an aviation unit, and then I did ROTC, graduated, then I went to what's now Benning. I guess it was Benning, and then Moore, and then now it's Benning again. I guess they changed it back, but yeah, Fort Benning / Fort Moore in Georgia, where I went to infantry school, airborne school, ranger school, and then my first duty station was Bragg.
Oh, check.
Really,
you went through all that before you got to your first duty station?
It's a bunch of training. That's, you know, that's how we did it.
That's crazy.
It was like 9 months. Back because it was, you know, 4 months of infantry school, a month of airborne school, a little over 2 months of ranger school, and then I remember I showed up to my unit at the 82nd Airborne Division, and I had like a week off for Christmas and for the holidays, and this was right before the invasion of Iraq in 2003. And I saluted, you know, Lieutenant Crow reporting, and my company commander is like, your platoon's out there in formation. We're going to war in 3 months. Train them well. Good luck.
My gosh.
And that was my first, what I like to call bucket of cold water moment.
Oh yeah.
You've had them too. I mean, this is real.
Did you sign up for Ranger School?
I did. Yeah.
What's that like?
Well, it sucks. It really sucks.
I knew, yeah.
Right? Like, and I mean, you've been through BUDS and done that, but it's just like a, it's just an attrition game, right? Everyone's like, oh, it's the best small unit tactics school in the country. I'm like, really? Because after the first like 72 hours, I can't remember shit. Because I was so tired and hungry. And that's the thing, is you get a couple of hours of sleep a night. You get like one meal, maybe two meals a day. You're cold. I was a winter ranger. There's, you know, all these I went through during the winter. And you don't think that Georgia is cold in the winter? Georgia is cold in the winter.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it gets cold down here.
Yeah, so it's just a suck fest is all it was, right? You're just cold and tired and hungry for 2 months, basically.
So when our officers get in trouble, they get sent to y'all. Mm-hmm. They have to go to ranger school. That's how we do that.
It's been too.
Yeah. How about
Except
that?
Except for the fact my ranger buddy was a Polish army officer, because he was, you know, went through one of these IMET, these military exchange training programs. All the Americans were, we were sucking, and we're like, we're cold, we're hungry. And, my buddy, the Polish officer was like, this is great. I get one four meal a day. They let us shower. Like, if you're sick, you get medicine. Like, I love this. Like, he was living his best life.
Isn't that crazy, the difference between us like that? Like, yeah. You get in a program with some of those foreign exchange guys, and they'll be in heaven. Like, this is the best time of my life ever.
Tough guy.
They
Makes
are.
You appreciate home and just everything that we have to offer is, I mean, even in the government, even in military. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big deal, though, when we guys get cross-rated like that, because when we do interops, when our officers would walk in and we wear the ranger tab underneath their front pocket.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. They're not allowed to wear it on our sleeves, but they'll wear it.
What was the toughest? Was Bud's the toughest for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, hands down. Sniper school sucked, but for the overall kick in the nether region is Bud's. It's designed that way for a reason.
Well, and you did 18 Delta.
Yeah. Yeah, I was at Bragg for 18.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
and that was a mental kick in the face.
Yeah.
So
that's the medical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that's really hard. My best friend's in the Rangers. He was originally an 18 Delta, become an EA.
Yeah.
As a master sergeant and did Delta as well, and then I went over to the Rangers.
Tell us about your time with the Rangers.
Yeah, so I was in Iraq with the 82nd Airborne Division, was a rifle PL, then a mortar PL, and then my battalion commander had been tasked to take over 275 2nd Ranger BAT at Fort Lewis in Washington. And he called me into the office one day, and he's like, what do you think of Fort Lewis? And I said, well, sir, it doesn't really matter what I think of Fort Lewis, does it?
No. Appreciate you asking.
So went through a rope. So the officers go through rope, which is the Ranger orientation program, which is basically 3 weeks of just hard PT and running O courses and shooting. Like, we would shoot for hours a day, marksmanship, some CQB and things like that. And went through rope and then took over a platoon, 275, and went immediately to Afghanistan. So I did a rotation, like you guys, we were on the 4-8 schedule, right? So it'd be 4 months. Deployed 8 months back. So I joined my platoon over in Afghanistan in 04, and then again in 05, which is where I overlapped with you and the strike force at the time.
So were you on the ground during Red Wing?
I was, yeah. So it was my battalion. We were the Ranger battalion that was synced with the SEALs, and I had been at Salerno, forward operating base Salerno, for most of Salerno and Chapman. Remember Chapman?
Yeah.
I'd have been.
Man, I haven't.
Been,
yes.
Yes, I was down there with the strike force in that area.
Is that where laid y'all up there? I'm sorry to interrupt. That's where you were laid up that whole time?
Well, they during your operation. I had been ripped out. We were in the process of being ripped out. The other battalion was coming to take us out. So I had just flown back to Bagram when the shit hit the fan and Red Wing kicked off. So I ended up doing air operations. I was helping as assistant S3 air, helping coordinate some of the air ops for the rescue mission.
Bro, we would land in Salerno to drop in before we went out even further, and we'd get stranded there every now and again because runway would get when it would rain and we couldn't get the planes couldn't land and pull us out of there. I mean, for weeks we get stuck there because we used to go over there and steal y'all's laundry because we didn't have any clothes to wear. And you gotta believe this place, they stuck us, man. It was just out in the middle of nowhere. That and Chapman.
Yeah, Chapman was like definitely out in the middle of nowhere. Ugh. I remember the SEALs over at Chapman had those monkeys. They had like a cage of live monkeys, and then and literally
these places,
SEAL,
man.
Literally the SEAL, I'm like, I roll up in there and I'm like, why do you have a bunch of like live monkeys? what is going on here?
Dude,
until one of the SEALs got bit by the monkey. And somebody at like higher up was like, okay, all right, enough with the monkeys. It's like someone's gonna get some crazy tropical disease here.
That's how it works. It's like we were allowed to get away with some stuff till somebody got hurt, and then it'd be like, oh, okay, now we gotta reel everything back in.
How do you even get monkeys?
I mean, I had turkeys. My platoon had pet turkeys in Iraq. And that's simply because I was trying to figure out how to get them a Thanksgiving meal.
Yeah,
we were stuck there. We hadn't had anything but MREs and like bologna sandwiches for months. So Thanksgiving was coming up, and I'm like, I'm gonna pull this off. Like I'm gonna pull off the coup of having like a fresh turkey meal for my platoon. So I went out. I was trying to find turkeys, and I found in South Baghdad this dude that had a bunch of turkeys, and I paid him like $20 cash for the turkeys, but I had to take off my body armor and run around and catch them.
Oh my gosh, like, how funny.
I was like Rocky.
Rocky movie right there, man.
Exactly. I was like Rocky running around catching the turkeys. And of course all my men were like having the grandest time ever watching me trying to catch these turkeys. So I caught the turkeys and brought them back to the FOB, and I'm like, I've got turkeys. And by the next day, my platoon had created this turkey habitat and like built it out and had named them Fred and Wilma. I'm like, we're not eating these turkeys.
Yeah, I can't ever name what you're going to eat.
Once they were named, I'm like, it's over.
Yeah.
Someone's eating these turkeys.
I squared away. You found that though, man.
Uh-huh. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't, a bunch of Iraqi turkeys. I couldn't believe it.
That's hilarious.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with Ultra Titanium Alloy Metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
We always had to go. I did a Thanksgiving Christmas deployment too. And we'd always raid the CIA guys because they always had stuff.
They had good stuff.
Yeah, they always had good stuff, man. We go trade with them, barter with them.
Yeah,
that's hilarious. So, with the 20th anniversary coming up of Red Wing, we are trying to hear everybody's different perspectives of the mission. Just can you share like the details that you remember?
Yeah. So you know, remember it happening and the compromise and the shoot down of the rescue birds and just, you know, the major hit for our task force. And then my buddy, Rick English, was one of my closer friends, went in. He was, you know, he was our recce PL, as you recall, Marcus. And, he went in and helped get you out. And, Rick is just an incredible guy. He's since passed away.
Yeah.
He obviously was a big part of it, and some of our Ranger reconnaissance folks were a big part of it. And you know, it was a huge hit. And I feel kind of weird saying that because, obviously it was your buddies and you were closer to them. But when the task force takes a hit like that, we all feel it to some degree. Mm-hmm. And then I went home like within days afterwards, right? It was like that weird transition that we all make.
Yeah.
When we were, you know, in special operations, where there was like really no transition. You literally just get on the special air mission bird, and you know, 20 hours later, you're at the shop at
back home.
Back home.
It's a crazy. It's so fast.
So fast.
That's crazy.
No transition.
And when we were
like, wow, like I just, you know, a day ago, I was in in the combat zone. And that's it.
The thing about Bagram and 05 when we were all there is everyone knew each other.
Or one, mm-hmm. Yeah, 1 degree of separation, basically.
At the very least, mm-hmm. 1 degree. I mean, and that usually never happens. I mean, you'd have face time with the pilots, with the air assets, artillery, everybody.
Yeah.
We all kind of ate at the same place. And then, everybody. Then
There was that really pretty good gym. You know, the half shell gym?
Yeah, yeah.
The OCF, because we were all at the OCF compound. And that gym was sick,
man. it was in the middle of the freaking hell, dude. But it was like, we can turn anything into paradise, right? When you assimilate, and we just always run into each other doing that in garrison like that. And then when you went out, everyone knew when someone was going outside the wire, even if you were top secret. It's just kind of the way it was, because we had to have somebody watching out for us at all times. And then he was talking about when guys would rip in, you'd literally be with some guys, and they'd send a few in ahead of time to kind of advon, to get everything situated. But then right overnight, man, as soon as one bird landed, they throw them suckers on there, and they're gone forever.
Gone, yeah. Just like that. Amazing. Yep. The op tempo was unbelievable looking back on it, right? Like, it helped that I was in my 20s.
It absolutely does. That's why we send them.
But like, you know, constantly just going, it was really something. It was really something. But yeah, if you have a good gym, it all comes together. That was like my first priority after the fall of Baghdad. And we all took over sectors and with my airborne platoon. And I'm like priority number two. Like priority one was creating the HESCO barriers and getting security established. And priority two was, I got to find some gym equipment.
Well, it sounds like you were good at finding things. You can get turkeys in Iraq. You can get a gym put together.
I scrounge. I'm a scrounger.
I like it.
Dude, you can't believe what our guys have come up with.
Well, obviously monkeys in a cage.
I never found the monkeys, though. That was, you know, the monkeys eluded me.
That's crazy. How long did you end up serving for?
I was enlisted in the Guard for 4 years, then active for a little under four, and then back in the Guard for about a year and a half. So combined Guard and active time, a little short of a decade.
Yeah.
The overall time.
So you didn't finish out?
No. I went to law school, was starting family, and I just was moving on to a different phase of my life. So
listen, I want to ask you a question about that. I got a lot of the guys that I mentored that went in, they're doing 4 and 8s and they're popping out and they're asking, what should I do? Their parents are asking me too. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, for my kid. And what's a great transition thing to do? And I'm kind of a big proponent of college. I mean, they got the GI Bill. And a lot of them said, well, you know, they didn't really have the study habits, or they wouldn't have done well in college to begin with. I was like, well, once you do 4 years in the military, that changes everything.
Yeah.
It changes everything. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I'm college is good. What I tell a lot of folks is the trades,
mm-hmm.
right? Go into, you want to know people who are making a ton of money.
Yeah.
Talk to a plumber, an electrician, right? Like a welder.
The HVAC guys are making like millions.
Big money. And then they open up their own shop, and they have some guys working for them. They're, you know, these people are making, you know, easily six figures well into it.
Oh, yeah, easy.
200 or 300, right? They're busier than you can imagine. Like, they're turning work away. They have more work that they can handle. They're, you know, making $100+ an hour. I just tell people, listen, you need to look at the trades, like sync up with a union and go trade craft shop, or go to a tech voc tech program. Like, and we don't have enough in America, right? That's one of our single biggest problems. We talk about rebuilding America and building infrastructure and doing all these things we need to do, we literally don't have the tradespeople to do it. Like, we don't have enough people.
How about that?
So I don't know. I think people should look at that too.
We just had a guy on this last podcast, West Point graduate, and a Bradley commander. We were in Iraq together, and he owns a plumbing thing now. We were just talking about that. He's like, hey man, he's like, doctors are not going to, we're always going to need them. You're always going to need a plumber. Mm-hmm. He's like, when the computer age came online, everybody kind of shifted over there, including the generation behind us, and they all forgot about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It goes, those trades are where it's at, man.
Seriously. Yeah. You can create a small business, big time. So I don't know, because we also have this thing, there's this stigma around trades and non-college careers in America, right? Like, I feel like decades ago, we had this focus, oh, you got to go to college.
Yeah.
Right? It's the only way, right? And then that's the focus of, you know, high schools now and like career mentorship. And because of that, there's a lot of young folks who aren't looking at the trades and construction and contracting and small business. And I think we're losing out. Yeah. So I don't know. I think we just got to reimagine the workforce a little bit and like our education pipeline.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with Ultra Titanium Alloy Metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
I remember when I was in high school, there was like shop and stuff that the guys always loved doing, where at our kids' school, they don't even offer anything like that. There's no shop. There's no, they don't learn any kind of trade.
It's true. Yeah. Schools have cut back those programs.
Mm-hmm.
Big time. I think we got to be more open to those, you know, not quote unquote non-traditional pathways, right?
Yeah, because the guys and girls who couldn't get into college, then instead of doing the trades, don't do anything.
Yeah,
that's right.
And they're not really recruiting that hard. I remember there was always a commercial on TV. Remember ITT Tech and then DeVry,
yeah, right?
And all those commercials that would come on. I mean, there was
ITT
and Concordia, yeah, all and that. All those others. Yeah, right.
We need to do a better job of marketing that for that, because.
Oh, I remember that transition though, coming out of active duty, because I had just left the Rangers and then I decided to go to law school, which I did. And I remember in like my orientation in law school, where you all sit around and like most of my classmates had just come out of undergrad, just come out of school, like undergraduate. And we do all these like orientation things where you sit around in circles and ask each other's names and like tell people all these like trust building things. And I remember saying, hey, you know, my name is Jason Crow and I was an Army Ranger. Look forward to meeting y'all and like getting to know you. And there was this one other student. She was like, Army Ranger. Like, I thought Rangers were only in national parks. I didn't know the Army also had Rangers.
Oh my gosh.
And that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that was the first moment where I'm like, I'm not sure you understand what's going on here.
Oh my god!
You know the civil military divide, right? Like how little of an understanding a lot of people in America have of the military and service. So that was my first exposure to it post military.
Well, that just means we're doing our job real well. If you can have a civilian populace that doesn't have to understand the intricacies of its warfighters.
What do we even say when you just come out of war and, I mean, within a few years and someone says that to you? What's your response?
How was that? How did you get used to that?
How do you respond to someone?
I just kept my head down and just did my job. I was not there to party. I wasn't there to like, you know, to like extend the and have like, you know, college 2.0. I was there to get my law degree and get on with it and get to work. So I just kind of did my thing. And this was, I was like on the leading edge of, this was 2006. So I was kind of on the leading edge of the global war on terror veterans who were leaving.
Yeah.
So there weren't the whole like ecosystem of organizations and like mentorship and all that stuff really hadn't been built out yet. So I was just kind of on my own, right? So I actually, that was one of the reasons I became a veterans advocate and why I ended up going to politics, because I realized that, you know, to be a veterans advocate, like you had to you had to be the squeaky wheel in politics too, and advocate for veterans organizations. And so that's what I did. I just got involved as a vets advocate.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle.
With ultra-titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save
big time.
For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
What are some of the things that you see as an advocate for veterans that's most needed?
Well, we obviously need to address the really tough challenge of veteran suicide, which is way above the national average.
That's
way
crazy.
Above the national average.
Yeah.
And I have this bill. Marcus, it's me and your brother have this bill. I just realized Morgan's my
go co-sponsor. Like hell, man. If you got him on board, bro, get it done.
I know. So Morgan and I have this bill is trying to stop veteran suicide at VA facilities, because here's a tough stat. And I always get a little choked up when I talk about this. But a lot of our fellow vets take their lives at VA facilities because they know that they'll be taken care of after the fact if they do it there.
That's
and
awesome.
It's tough. It's a real problem. And what we don't have is good data on it. Like, we don't know when it's happening, who's doing it, what's working to stop it and what's not. And the VA just hasn't been collecting this information, and we've been asking for it. So we have a bill called the Veteran Sentinel Act that will require the VA to give us information, tell us like how often it's happening, real hard data, where people are doing it. I mean, literally, like, sometimes this happens in like parking garages and stuff, right? So we want to know, hey, if we put a crisis hotline, sign up in a parking garage or have a phone or something, like, can we intervene at the right moment? So, you know, good policy. We can only make good policy if we have good information. So that's what we're trying to gather. So we're working on that, Bill.
I would love to know why this is happening to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most highly trained guy. I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't know what, if we picked something up while we were over there in those places, like a dark passenger or something, that I don't know. I mean, yeah. I think about it all the time now. I think about it all the time. I get phone calls all the time about our guys doing that.
You think about the crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys,
I think it's part of the stigma, though, right? There's still a stigma around mental health and crisis where, you know, we have the warrior culture. We all have it. You know, we're tough. We can handle anything. We can plow through anything. You give me a mission, I can deal with it. And sometimes when you come back, you can't. Mm-hmm. Right? So, like, I don't know. I think we need to talk about it. I think we need to reach out to our brothers and sisters and be like, all right, how you doing? Are you doing okay?
I mean, for real.
Marcus has this thing where you should have like a swim in SEAL teams, they call them a swim buddy, like your
ranger buddy,
whatever you call it. And you just pick one and you check on them every day. And
literally send them a text, because now we have tech. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, we didn't have that back when we were kids in the 1900s, man. We just didn't have all that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, why don't we have an enlistment for at least 2 to 4 years as you're getting out, so we can transition. Because, man, just as fast as they ripped you and I out of the battlefields, that's how fast we got out of the military.
Totally.
I mean, it was like within a half a day. I remember the gate shutting behind me. I'll never forget this. My parabag, I left one inside the gate. The gate shut, and I went to swipe my ID and couldn't get in. How about that? And then one dude walks up.
How about it? Don't let the door hit your ass.
Yeah, don't let it hit you in the ass on the way out. And literally one of my buddies messed with me, goes, can I help you? I'm sorry, I don't recognize you. Are you in the military? No, you're not. I mean, like that.
Yeah,
and it's literally, we would cut him off. We just get cut off just like that. And going from 100 miles an hour and hitting that wall is hard. I mean, the hardest thing I ever did.
Remember I had a very similar moment where I don't know if they called this CIF, in the Navy, but in the Army, it's called the Central Issue Facility, where you got to go back and turn all your gear back in. So I went through CIF and literally had this like 5-sheet piece of paper where I had to like go to all the stations, and they stamped out every place I went, medical stamp, CIF stamp, yeah. You know, had to go make sure that, you know, I didn't owe anybody money at the shop at stamp. And then I got my final stamp and they hand me the paper. I'm like, all right, good luck.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. No, I said, now what? They're like, that's it. Good luck. Gates that way.
Oh, I was like, gosh.
Wow. Just like that.
Yeah.
Same thing, man. Same thing.
Yeah. There's just, I just think, man, you need to be assigned like a pen pal or like your friend. And then when you get out, man, you have to check in on them suckers all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just pick two. Just pick two of them, and then they pick two, and then you just always have eyes on somebody, because that's the biggest thing with us, man, is having eyes on our buddies. Yep. We literally are our brother's keepers.
That's the single. I love that idea, because it's the single most important thing, right? Like even more than, I mean, not that we shouldn't have this, and we actually should. I support the hotlines and stuff like that, but having someone you know mm-hmm. and you trust is single most important thing. No doubt about it.
Oh man, you and I don't need enemies. We have friends.
Yeah.
We have teammates, man. Them suckers talk down to you worse than anybody. And it's usually through love, and they'll tell you straight up. Like, my brother never says anything nice to me. And he's my freaking hero. I love him to death, but he literally doesn't say anything nice to me. And I it's just to keep me in check. And I get that. And that's the way it is. That's what I loved about being in our communities, man. It's the same way.
Yeah.
And online, social media, Marcus doesn't get on and he doesn't see this, but the veteran-on-veteran hate is so strong right now. There's so many, especially on social media. There's this veteran, it's never civilian-on-veteran. It's veteran-on-veteran hate that is so strange to me. I'm like, y'all are all on the same team. Support each other, love each other, lift each other up, talk shit in a good way where, like how Marcus is talking, like hold each other accountable, but don't hate on each other. There's no reason for that. We're all on Team America. So
fuck yeah.
I don't understand the social media veteran on veteran hate right now. It's
veterans
weird.
Have been pulled into, it's an amazing point. I think vets have been pulled into, you know, these vitriolic partisan battles mm-hmm. and some of these culture war battles, which, you know, is unfortunate. Like I see it too, right? People that used to be brother, people that you literally would be willing to lay down your life for each other are now, you know, banging on each other on social media. Like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we have a responsibility, actually. I think this is our service 2.0 for us to like figure out as vets, how can we lead again in the country and show the country how to disagree again.
Yeah.
Right. And how to debate again, that we can have, you know, sometimes pretty hot debates, pretty tough debates. Yeah. And that's not to say that they can't be fierce arguments, but, you know, stop short of calling each other evil, saying we're a threat to, you know, your life. Like,
oh yeah, that crap. There's some, there's a couple of words that I've heard guys use to other guys. I'm like, hey man, you don't say that. You know, you just don't call people like cowards and stuff like me. I'll call somebody who's serving military.
Yeah.
Well, even just like discrediting people, like there's always someone out there trying to pick a fight. And it's like, how many, if statistically on this suicide, front, how many of those guys were bullied online by other veterans?
Right.
So you hear about suicide, you know, as teens and stuff like that, a lot of it's bullying, but you never even hear about the veteran on veteran bullying. It is bad.
That stings harder than anything.
How do we break it? Like, how do we try to
That's a good question.
Stop the cycle?
I think there needs to be some really big meeting of the minds of veterans from all branches, from different generations.
It's only been a couple of that. Go ahead.
And talk about it and say, you know, cut it out. Like, you need to show each other support and love. And I know that sounds cheesy, but you do. That's who you love. Like, you would lay down your life for that person if y'all were in war together. Why aren't you doing it?
Yeah, we need a veteran council.
Mm-hmm.
All you boys up in D.C., throw a huge party. Get every single one of us up there and let's just sit down like they used to do back in the day.
Would be a component to the solution.
All right.
right? Like
Marcus doesn't drink anymore, so a party
sure
without
what the other
alcohol.
Elements are, but I am sure that a big party is an essential element.
Yeah, I mean, when we get together, man, I mean, what are we talking about here? I think that's what needs to happen. Just a big rally, all of us get together, blow off some steam, then have the rules, like the commandments. Look, when you get out, you got to act like this. Mm-hmm. We have them when we're in.
Yeah.
You got your general orders when you're in.
Totally.
Let's make it, hey, you don't ever get out of this. You never get out. Matter of fact, you go into the military to become a veteran. That's the best part. And then we do a better job. I mean, our generation is going to have to do that. I feel that our generation is different than the one ahead of us and the ones behind us. And we've taken the most, we take pain like you can't believe and everything in between. Why not us? Let's just be the ones to do
that. I view it similar to, and I'm not comparing ourselves to the Greatest Generation, but I'm saying the responsibility is similar, right? The Greatest Generation fought World War II, defeated fascism, and they came back and they became the civic leaders, the political leaders, the business leaders. They set the standard for what citizenship was about. It was not just about duties, but also responsibilities to each other and fulfilling obligations.
Yeah.
Here and they, it was like a lifetime commitment to service. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think we need that call again for our generation of veterans to be like, we need to stand up and serve again and show how we can do it right and stop tearing each other apart.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That's cause that leads down bad roads.
Mm-hmm. It does.
We're real good at that. I mean, we fight terrorists for a living. That's what you and I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if we start fighting each other, we fight like terrorists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we can terrorize you. We literally have the capabilities to do that. I can't believe. And not even pissed off. I don't even know what would happen if we got pissed off. And like, oh, heaven help everybody if that don't give a shit switch flips. Because then it's real bad.
We need a positive outlet for the energy, right? We need to pull in. I don't know. I think people want to be asked to serve. People want an opportunity to step up in a positive way.
Sure, man. It feels so much better.
We have the bipartisan Veterans Caucus in Congress. And it's been amazing, right? It's 50-50 roughly. We call it a Noah's Ark caucus because you got to join with somebody other side of the aisle, right?
That's great. That's great, right? Man.
And we have it. There's like almost 40 of us now. And because vets like pledges, we actually created a pledge. It's really simple. It's, we're not going to campaign against each other. We're not going to bang up on each other on social media or on TV. We're going to co-sponsor each other's bills. And actually the fourth one is we're actually going to get together outside of work. So after votes, we're going to grab a beer. We're going to go to dinner. Yeah. We're going to get to know each other because it's amazing. When you actually get to know someone, become a buddy with them.
Oh, it changes everything.
And you're not going on CNN or Fox or whatever the case might be and banging up on them.
Yeah.
Right? When you're having dinner with them and their spouse that night.
That ought to be mandatory. If you're a Republican, you get assigned a Democrat. There's your buddy. Mm-hmm. You guys got to work together and get this thing figured out. I mean.
Well, it turns out it works, actually, because we're small. We're a small group compared to the larger. But we actually are one of the most successful caucuses in Congress. We've passed over 100 bills into law in the last 6 years. 100.
Crazy.
Doing that.
Well, man, keep that energy going, man. Grab my brother and go like hell.
And we're doing
it. Cut a swath through it. Man, we're going to close this out. I know you probably got to get going, man. We've gone over an hour now, but thank you again for coming on here. And
I had one question. Are you supporting the psychedelic research for veterans?
I am. Yeah. Yeah. Good. I've signed on to that. So, Crenshaw got a hold of me on that one.
Yeah. It's really, I would have never been the person to advocate for psychedelics. I am not, I don't know. Drugs just isn't my thing. The whole word scares me, but I have seen firsthand that what it actually does and the healing that it brings is there's nothing else like it. So it's really amazing.
I have heard a lot of positive stories about it. A lot of people swear by it that it saved their lives. And listen, I'm clearly the old method of someone has chronic pain or TBI or PTS and you just pump them with opioids. Clearly that's not going to work.
No, right? It's like, not working.
Yeah, we tried that.
And that's killing folks too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm all about, cannabis research, psychedelic research. Like we again, this goes back to the data point. Like, let's research it.
Right.
Let's see what works. Let's see what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Let's see how we can take the stuff that works and scale it and do. I mean, we owe it to the vets. So yeah. I'm definitely supportive of that effort.
Awesome. That's thank great, you
man.
For coming.
Yeah. Thanks,
on.
Brother. I appreciate you, man. God bless you.
Yeah. It was great to chat with you all. Truly, I'd love to do it again.
Yeah.
We're happy
to know
anything,
when you're
man.
In DC too next time.
We'll be there in June for the congressional baseball game.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's the only time. I think this should be America's game.
Yeah.
When the congressional baseball game. Like, if you want to hoot and holler and yell at some man, just go to this thing because that's where you can do it. And leave it on the field.
Yeah.
Get it all out.
Get it all out on there because I'm going to yell at my brother.
Yeah.
You going to heckle him?
I'm going to heckle my brother like you can't believe.
He's the catcher, right?
Yeah, he's the catcher.
I'll heckle him.
All right, brother. Thanks again, man.
Yeah. All right, guy. Yeah. Yeah, appreciate it.
And so how should everybody find you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you can. I'm on X under Jason Crow, so you all can find me there. Follow me. That's the best place. Instagram, I have all the social media following. So
awesome.
Okay,
but my favorite is when I do my weekend night when I start drinking whiskey and tweeting on my own. So that's always the best stuff.
It always turns out good.
It turns out good.
That's funny.
Awesome. All right, guys.
Yeah, bro.
That's great. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take it easy.